Sports betting season is in full force. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS has been pioneers in the sportsbook industry for almost three decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BetUS.com. They have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 800-69-BETUS. That is 800-MY-BETUS. And you will receive a 125% sign-up bonus by using the bonus code 5. That's the word 5, F-I-V-E. They also have re-up and referral bonuses as well. Follow my lead and open an account with BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS. Let me tell you about Underdog Fantasy. Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest way to play fantasy football this season. Just draft. No need to worry about waivers, lineups, or injuries. Underdog Fantasy handles it all for you. Go to UnderdogFantasy.com or download the app, draft a season-long best ball team, and that's it. No in-season management. You can even bring over your home league over to UnderdogFantasy.com. You get $25 upon sign-up, so you can take a free shot at a $1 million grand prize for their fantasy football tournament. Again, you get $25 free in bonus cash when you use the code 5RSN to sign up. It has never been easier to take a shot at a $1 million prize in their Best Ball Mania tournament. Go to UnderdogFantasy.com, the App Store, or Google Play Store, use the promo code 5RSN, and get $25 in bonus cash. Sign up today. U-Brake Wheel Fix is a wheel repair and remanufacturing company with over 20 years of experience. They specialize in complete wheel repair, repairing wheels from curb rash, bends, and cracks. They also specialize in refinishing from polishing, machining, and custom colors that will suit your car's needs. Lastly, U-Brake Wheel Fix offers a full array of factory and custom wheel and tire applications. Contact them at 305-748-0112. That's 305-748-0112 or at U-Brake Wheel Fix on all social platforms. This show is brought to you by Lewis Peters State Farm, agency representing the number one auto and home insurer in the United States for more than 60 years combined experience in the insurance industry. Local agents that understand South Florida's unique market, you have access to them 24/7, walk-in, call-in, click-in through lewispeters.com. You can find them online on social media at SF Agent Peters, or you can call at 305-275-5585. Remember, lewispeters.com.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. This is a victorious edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is here. Chris Kaufman is here. And as always, we are brought to you by Manscaped. Use promo code 5RSN for 20% off your entire order. Simon, what a game. Your impressions, your initial impressions on the game, and then we'll get into some more details.
Yeah, I thought it was two good teams, clearly going up against each other. A lot to work on, obviously, for both sides. A lot to work on for the Dolphins. A lot of encouraging things. Some kind of questionable things, I think. And stuff that I know Chris has been looking back at film today. I haven't had time to yet, but intrigued to look at a few players. But, you know, a win is a win. A road win is a road win. And a divisional road win is pretty massive to kick off a season. So, you know, lots to be encouraged about.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought I was going to be, you know, depends. If you play a team like a team that you know is bad, maybe Jacksonville on the road or the Texans, although who knows, the Texans just put up a pile of points this weekend. But let's say you play the Texans on the road and you just eke it out. Maybe you could be unhappy about it. But beating Belichick in Gillette in New England, no. To start the season when he's had months to prepare for your team, and when he probably got Malcolm Perry in a dark room and shined a light in his face and had him give up an entire playbook, maybe. But no, you can't. You got to be happy with that. Chris, your initial thoughts of that game yesterday?
I don't know. From a lot of people out there, it almost doesn't feel like a victory Monday. you know, from the general mood. And I think it was just because it was such a, you know, brutal, ugly game between the two opponents. But I absolutely agree with you. You go on the road. This is a packed stadium. I said, you know, before in the preview podcast, this is going to be a packed stadium, sold out completely. And the first time these guys have all been back, I believe this is the first game where everybody's back since the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so emotions were going to be running really high in the crowd. You know, emotions were going to be running really high with the players, you know, getting to play in front of their crowd again, finally. And so this was going to be really hard. I wanted to pick the Dolphins to win the game. I thought they matched up better, but it's like that home advantage is going to be huge. And I thought that there were some situations around the NFL where it was pretty huge. So yeah, it's just a really big, big win. And, you know, there's not universal agreement that the New England Patriots are going to make the playoffs, but, much more often people were saying, plugging the New England Patriots into the playoffs, say the number fifth or number sixth seed, with the Dolphins missing the playoffs. And I think after a game like this, you kind of have to pull yourself back from it and say, well, wait a minute. Does the playoff team lose to the non-playoff team at home, you know?
Yeah.
In their own stadium in front of a very, you know, very loud, very active, sold out fan base. I'm not sure about that, but the Dolphins eked it out. When I did film review today, and we'll go into it a little bit more, but when I did film review today, I did, to be fair to the naysayers, I found like as much negative as positive, maybe even a little bit more for the Dolphins. So, you know, there's definitely a lot to be worked on, but still, you know, feels good to come away with that one.
All right, let's get into it and let's talk about the offense first. Simon, you know, it seems, I don't know, maybe it's too easy to just say this, but it looked like when they came into the game with a script, they knew what they wanted to get into. They knew what cadence they wanted to do everything at what tempo they wanted to run everything at, which personnel groupings they wanted to use. They cut through that New England defense like the Kansas City Chiefs. They looked like the greatest show on turf. And yeah, then in the second half, they do it again. The rest of the game, not so much.
Yeah, that's one of the things that concerns, because it's the first game, but the inconsistency of the offense. You know, they were moving the ball on the ground, for example, and then all of a sudden they just went away from the ground game completely, you know, and then when they came back to it, they were running, you know, sweeps and, you know, whereas they'd had huge success, you know, just knifing between the tackles. It felt very much as though the first kind of 10, 15 plays were scripted, almost that old Bill Walsh thing of scripting those plays. And you know, they knew exactly where they're going. The RPO game was working brilliantly. And then all of a sudden they kind of went away from it. And it was almost, I mean, I don't think it was, but it almost felt like, you know, Godsey was calling the first series, Studsville was calling the second series. And it was back to God. It was just inconsistent. I wonder whether the game would have been as close if Jalen Waddle catches that third down pass. I thought Tua got let down slightly by a couple of drops. You know, the play by JC Jackson and Devontae Parker was a great play, but you kind of hope that it was a great throw. And it's interesting that the kind of narrative seems to be around the interception rather than anything else that Tua did. I thought he played very well. But I do think that consistency really needs to be ironed out if the team is going to take that next step. I thought there were times, like I said, you know, where it looked to be integrating really well. Obviously there's questions about the offensive line, which doesn't help. And you look at the time that Mac Jones had to throw compared to the time that Tua had to throw. And it's night and day. The lack of Mike Gesicki, obviously, you know, the Patriots did a good job of shutting him down, but you know, I think was he held to zero catches or one catch? He had the one catch on the play that was called back when Kindley was illegally downfield. Did he have another catch in the game? I'm not sure that he did.
Nope. And I don't think he even had a target either.
Yeah, I mean,
he had a target, but it was low. It was low. It was on target, but I think he kind of knocked it down a little bit.
You know, again, much like the overall performance, you know, intriguing, some good, some bad, and a lot to work on. You know, I think It's such a massive year for Tua. It's such a massive year. But, you know, he seems to have done an outstanding job all through his career of shutting out the outside noise. You know, I read Albert Breer today, and Breer saying, you know, oh, the Dolphins have got to be pretty, you know, that they've got to be thinking about the future and blah, blah. You know, Tua's performance was pretty poor. And you just think, what game did you watch? What, you know, I heard the quote from Jonathan Jones saying, you know, oh, that's what, you know, Tua has only got one read and that's it.
Jason Jackson, by the way.
No, it was JC Jackson. I thought it was Jonathan Jones, the guy that had the interception.
No, it was JC Jackson.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was just a little bit unfair, a little bit unnecessary, really, because, you know, it's not representative of the game or how he performs. So, but, you know, he certainly has other stuff to work on as well. So, obviously, another big boy game next week. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. And on that front, I'm not surprised that JC Jackson piped up, because Tua is not like he's not a shy flower. Okay, he's a little bit chirpy, and think about who JC Jackson had to go against all day. Devontae Parker. Devontae Parker doesn't stop talking from the start of the game, and who knows? Maybe he got an earful from Devontae Parker all game, and he was a little bit frustrated and decided, you know, I'm going to take it out on the young quarterback. But I agree with you. Waddle catches that out route. I don't know if you saw the replay of it, but McCourty gets absolutely flattened by Devontae Parker, and Waddle has one guy to beat. If he could shake Jonathan Jones, he might score from there. Mm. And then, you know, game of inches. We're talking about 6 inches, a little further out, and Albert Wilson catches that go route on Jalen Mills. And then we're talking about Tua having a monster game. 4 touchdowns, maybe 300 yards. So, you know, it's right there. Chris, the offense.
It's not though, is it? We can't keep saying.
That's true.
That whataboutery is not like, you know, because if we said, oh, Mac Jones could have done this or Patrick Mahomes could have done that, we can't live like that. We have to accept that what happened happened. I'm not criticizing you, but I'm just making the point that, you know, if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle kind of thing. We've got to, you know, yes, we were close on a few occasions, but close doesn't win you Super Bowls. You know what I mean? We've got to make those plays happen. You know,
well, that's where they got to get to.
For sure. Absolutely. But I don't think we can sort of live in this world where we're going, oh, well, he could have had 4 touchdowns if this had happened, because it didn't happen and he didn't. So, yeah, I think he played okay, played pretty well. But, you know, that's a kind of bugbear of mine.
Except for that.
I'm not having a go at you, though.
No, but
Except for that last play at the end, though.
Yeah, for
I agree
sure.
with. Well, I agree, but the thing is, you can do the whatabouts, I think, a little bit, you know, when there's something egregious with the officiating. But if it's something that your team earned, or that the other team earned or failed to earn, you know, what are you doing a whatabout for? About your team wasn't good enough, you know. I think that you got to focus on what they earned and what they did not earn. And, you know, there's some places the refereeing was, the officiating was a little bit questionable, but, you know, you can ask about that, but not about the other stuff.
Yeah. And on the officiating front, and I guess we'll touch on it very, very briefly. I spoke about this earlier. I was on with Alex Dano, and 2 years ago, most media members don't show up to these things, but I found it interesting to go to the seminar that the league does every single year for the media, where they have the head of officials. You get to ask them questions. 2 years ago, I asked specifically about this, and I gave a bunch of ridiculous scenarios where they said no, because the official can determine, and obviously I'm talking about the Landon Roberts sack that became a 25-yard swing and eventually a touchdown. And the official told me clearly, look, you know, it has to do with intent. If the guy can do something else other than go low and hit the quarterback, then he should. But if all he can do is grab the quarterback low, then it's not a penalty, but it's at the discretion of the referee. So if I take the head of officials at his word, that was a bad call. Today, Channing Crowder was on his show with Mark Hochman, and he eviscerated the officiating. I don't know if you saw it the way he saw it. He thinks that the Patriots picked all day and that they called none of them, and that they should have called maybe 15 of them. He was extremely I don't know what words you would use for it, but he ranted for about half an hour on how bad the officiating was. Simon, was it as bad as Channing Crowder made it out to be?
I thought it was pretty egregious at times, I've got to say. There was, the Alandon Roberts was bad, but I can see why they called it, especially mm-hmm. in the moment. You know, it did feel a little bit like he was falling over, and you know, the impetus of absolutely destroying Ramondre Stevenson knocked him, you know, almost took away his ability to stay upright, and the only thing he could do was almost fall forwards and make the tackle. But he didn't go for his, you know, he pretty much tackled him around his calves, not his knees. So I thought that was pretty egregious. There was a couple of other calls I just thought that were just,
he got him around the thighs. I mean, the pictures show him that he got him right at the thighs.
There was a couple of other calls in that game that I just thought, Christ alive, what's happening? You know, I thought like the Tua rollout where Eichenberg on Matt Judon, I thought that was a good call. But there was one other, and I can't think what it was, and it was just like this.
The offsides that they blew dead.
Oh yeah, of course. When Jalen Ward was like 20 yards wide open down the seam, that was terrible. I mean, could you imagine them doing that to Tom Brady or to Aaron Rodgers, the king of getting defenses to jump offside, the king of free plays? Could you imagine that happening in a game where Brady or Rod, they would have gone absolutely apoplectic. I mean, Flo was going mad, but you know, I did think that those two calls especially were pretty horrendous. But you know, I mean, it's New England, isn't it? That's going to happen.
Yes.
Well, New England are kind of PhD level at those pick plays. I mean, so Channing Crowder going off about them, and they never call it. They never call it. So the referees, so you don't be surprised. In fact, I kind of had to question, the Dolphins played zone almost the entire first half, right?
Yes.
On defense. And I had to sort of question at some point, are they doing this because they're that worried about about New England's pick plays? And their tendency to do that, particularly in the red zone. Like, it's almost like the first touchdown set up the second touchdown, because in the first touchdown in the red zone, the one where they actually ran the ball in, the big play that got them that close to the end zone was a pick play. And it was, it was Justin Coleman, who was out there only two snaps on the day, but this was one of them. He fell into the trap, and he got picked off badly. And so Mac Jones had an easy completion to get them, you know, damn near the goal line. And that ended up with a touchdown. And so the next time Mac Jones brought them into the red zone, what happens? Miami's going to zone. And then the zone, you know, this is not a zone team, really. I mean, their identity, they're built for man. That's how they do things on the personnel side. Their identity is kind of man. And then they're playing this zone in the red zone, and it was just not tight enough. I mean, it was just soft. And he had, Nelson Agholor didn't have anybody with him within 4 yards of him, right on the goal line. He's just sitting on the goal line, like, hey, you know, throw it to me. And so I think that's it affected things. Now, you saw it in the second half, though. Flores can't go a whole game, right? He started he and Josh Boyer started calling a lot more man in the second half of the game. And particularly Flores and Boyer just went mad with the cover zero looks again, which is their, you know, their stock and trade. And the Patriots had some had some decent answers for that. They were hitting short passes, you know, quick outs and stuff like that against this cover zero. I thought that Miami's defensive linemen, their edge players, probably could have done a better job getting their hands up into the passing lanes, because they're supposed to, like, they're, you know, yeah, those edge players are supposed to shut that quick outside stuff down, especially when you got like a zero blitz happening. And so, you know, the Patriots were kind of dinking and dunking and moving their way down the field. And so they definitely had some success. But on offense, I mean, the offensive line, I was a little bit surprised. So there's a miscue. I tweeted a video of actually, Solomon Kinley and Robert Hunt pulling into each other. they both pulled in opposite directions and just like slapped bellies. And it was just like weird. And there were some miscues that way on the offensive line. Jesse Davis, I thought, had a rough day, overall. But otherwise, I was like, there are protection issues. You know, this is an issue of the protection. Like, why is Miles Gaskin trying to block Matt Judon like he's a right tackle? That's not supposed to happen. That was a schematic loss. There's some other things like that were like kind of protection, like another pass play. It's a play action, and you have Solomon Kinley and Michael Dieter crossing one another, right? Doing like a switch. And of course, like a defensive tackle runs right through, like, you know, as Michael Dieter's running one way, a defensive tackle just beelines straight to Tua Tagovailoa, and he's just got to throw the ball before anybody is ready for it, you know, and it ends up looking like a throwaway to Mike Gesicki, or a back shoulder that Mike Gesicki didn't look for or something like that, but it was because it came out so quickly. But otherwise, aside from miscues and like bad design, the offensive line was pass protecting fairly well. I mean, that might surprise people, but I was like, I'm going through every play and I'm like, you know, I'm really spotlighting some bad action by some of the offensive linemen, but I'm like, hey, they held up here, and then they held up here, and then they held up here, and then they held up, you know, like on these third and longs, these third and eights, third and 10, you know, stuff like that, stuff where the offensive line is supposed to really get hammered by, because they're not very good. But they weren't. And I think that, if you really look at that, you know, either maybe the Patriots front isn't as good as people thought, or maybe, you know, with Liam Eikenberg at left tackle, maybe they have something. But I think overall, I will say this, Liam Eikenberg should be starting at left or right tackle between Jesse Davis and Austin Jackson. Pick the weakest link and ditch him.
Yeah.
Can I just make a point about the receivers? I, the one thing that concerns me about the receivers is the three big plays were all contested catches. Parker, Waddle, and there was one other down the field catch. And Parker had two then, did he? And it just made me concerned about, you know, the quick hitting RPO throws, the quick slants, fantastic. But the actual throws down the field, and you do worry, it was a worry last year as well about the ability to create separation that the receivers have. And it's just something I think just to worth keeping an eye on. And something else to worth keeping an eye on, I think, is that they will hit a very long touchdown this season, because teams will be looking to bite and dive down on that quick hitting slant. And somebody like a Waddle will take two steps inside and two will just pump, and then they'll step back outside as the corner bites inside, and they'll be gone over the top. So I'd look out for that. But just... yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Will Fuller and what that does for separation in terms of Miami's ability because we don't really see, you know, you look last night at Matthew Stafford hitting, I know the Cooper Kupp touchdown was certainly a blown coverage, but you look at the Van Jefferson, you know, it's not often that the Dolphins complete those sorts of plays in terms of guys running open in sort of 3 or 4 yards of space. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out with Fuller and as Waddle gets more accomplished as we move forwards.
There was a play at the end that was really interesting. I put it on Twitter. This was the last drive. You know, we have to run out the clock. And then we had like the holding penalty. And so it's 1st and 14, and they're backed up against their own end zone, basically. And they've got 3.5 minutes that they need to, you know what you're thinking. You're thinking, oh, they're going to fail here, 3 and out, punt it. And then all Mac Jones has to do and all the New England Patriots have to do is get a field goal. You know, so that was a really critical situation. George Gotsi pulled out a play. It was beautiful. It worked beautifully, because I think actually on review, they called more RPOs than we thought. There are RPOs that don't necessarily look like the glance routes or the run to daylight routes that we see with the slants. And I think they called it a little bit more than we thought, but on that play, they called a fake RPO. And so this was, I mean, and because Tua is a left-hander and because his feet are so fast, you could do this, and his release is so fast. But they called a fake RPO to the play side to the left. And then Tua just, you know, before there was no mesh whatsoever.
Even better than that, Chris, it was a fake RPO and the run action was a counter trade. They pulled the guard and the tackle.
Yeah.
On that play.
Right. Yeah.
It's insane.
And hit Devontae Parker on the back side, you know, yep. And what made the play is how it came out and got into his hand so quickly. But
and if you notice it, by pulling the guard in the tackle, they moved the linebackers out of the throwing lane. And those guys followed our guard and tackle to a T. The play worked spectacularly. If they're giving out game balls to coaches after the game, Godsey deserves one for that was a hell of a
play call in a hell of a situation. You know, that was a game losing situation to me. You know, you're on the 5 yard line.
I wonder if Tua has a right handed throw in his armory. No, I'm serious. Because he's right-handed. I'd be really intrigued. If I was the offensive coordinator, and I apologize if I sound much roomier because I've gone into the kitchen because I'm cooking dinner and I'm clearly going to have to eat it during this podcast, which is, listeners, the fucking commitment that I give you. I wonder if he has... If I was George Godsey or Sussman, I'd be like, Tua, can you throw right-handed as well? And if he says
he golfs right-handed, by the way. I've seen a video of him golfing. He golfs right-handed. Everything.
He writes, he throws tennis balls, he picks his nose, he plays guitar, everything right-handed apart from throw. He must have a right-handed throw in his armory. I bet they've worked on it. I bet they have.
That would be something.
Wouldn't it?
All right, on the way out here, let's close this up by talking a little defense, okay? This game didn't start off too hot, Simon. 35-yard run. Yeah, 35 yards out of the box. I'm looking at it, and I'm trying to diagnose everything that went wrong. And I'm like, okay, fuck it. Everybody just got blocked, all right? Although, if you look at it again, it's Emmanuel Ogba managed not to flatten out. I don't know what the hell he was doing, but he has to crash down from his 5-tech spot. He's supposed to close that out, okay? Oh, boy. Since then, 35 yards. After that, 29 carries, 90 yards. That's 3.1 yards per carry. So that's our show plus about a foot, okay? So it's our show and a foot. I thought they were okay. Where they weren't okay, man, Mac Jones cut them up on third down.
Yeah.
And he took 8 quarterback hits, according to PFF. I'm told it was more by other people's counting. I thought he was just really good. Although he was safe with the ball, I thought on third downs, he kept them alive. Yeah, if not, the Dolphins could have ran away with this game if not for Mac Jones on third down.
Yeah, Chris and I were talking about this in the in our OnlyFans chat during the game, which was good fun as always. And it was interesting because, and look, I'm not saying he's Tom Brady. I'm not saying he's going to be Tom Brady. But the way he was able to move the ball on third down, especially when he got into that rhythm later on in the game, it just was
second half was ridiculous.
Remind you of Brady. It was like third and 8, convert, third and 3, convert, third and 1, convert, third and 9, convert. It was just like, come on, not again. This is ridiculous. Like, I thought he played well. You know, he dinked and dunked well. You know, Chris and I, again, we talked about the fact that under pressure early on, it just reminded us both of, you know, Alabama. That was the key thing, Alabama. You pressured him and he just looked, his mechanics, he just looked like he didn't know where to go with the ball. He looked a bit shaky early on. But, you know, as he got into his rhythm and we unsettled him and we were able to, you know, Ogba was getting in there and Sealer was getting in there and Phillips was providing some nice pressure. You know, he really, you know, there was some sort of crikey, this could be scary in 2 or 3 years' time sort of stuff. But overall, I thought it was really confusing in terms of what we did on defense. It's just like, I assumed that we would just blitz the shit out of him and then man cover on the outside. But it was, it kind of didn't feel like that at all. As Chris talked about, you know, zone and cover zero. I thought Jason McCourty had an outstanding game. I thought he was absolutely sensational. There you see, that's my alarm going off to tell me that dinner's ready. I thought, let me turn the oven off. I thought McCourty played it outstanding. He never looked, he was clearly instructed, do not throw under any circumstances in Xavier Howard's direction. I thought the concern was, you know, obviously Raekwon Davis, it was good that it was just, you know, it didn't feel like a, you know, it didn't seem like a serious injury and he was obviously moving about and stuff. So I thought John Jenkins, you don't want him on the field for 42 snaps, but I thought what he did pretty well. The concern for me was Jerome Baker, actually. And I kind of felt like, and again, Chris and I talked about this, but it almost felt like he had COVID. He'd had COVID. Didn't it, though? But in seriousness, it felt like it looked like he had COVID maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. And he was just like gassed. He was just slow to come back because he's such an energizer bunny all over the place. Like the James White, it felt like he was, you know, a step slow. But then the next play, he was like on his, like with his hand, like kneeled down actually, didn't he? To kind of gasping for breath. And you're just like, this is not the Jerome Baker we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years. And I don't think they were necessarily picking on him to that extent. It was just, I thought it was very interesting. And I wonder whether it was just a one-off, whether he was just feeling a bit under the weather or whether, you know, teams have spotted something with regards to that. But I thought overall it was just a slightly confusing. I thought they were just trying to confuse Mac Jones more and it didn't feel like they did. And everything that I assumed that would be available to Jones, you know, the underneath balls, the crossing routes, the screens, the flares, those sorts of things were available to him. And it was, you know, maybe they were worried about whether or not he could take downfield shots and stuff. And so that's that they were allow him, you know, that and flood the field with Rowe and McCourty and Javon Holland, who played 24 snaps. Brandon Jones had 11 snaps. But yeah, it felt like a little bit bend but don't break. It certainly felt like they were driving towards what should have been at least a game-winning field goal towards the end before Howard. You know, big players make big plays in big moments, and that's what Howard did. Justified his, you know, his contract and his status as, you know, and our only elite player. But yeah, I thought overall they played well. Again, like the offense, a lot to work on, but. Look, a win's a win. You know, it doesn't matter. At the end of the season, nobody's going to care how the defense played in this game. What they're going to care about is that Miami won 17-16, and that, at the end of the day, is the most important thing.
Yeah, and on the Baker front, Dolphins like to do this thing where they try to induce hot throws, and then they try to drop somebody into that zone where that ball is supposed to go. On one of those plays, Jerome Baker, for whatever reason, ran, I think, in the wrong direction because – there's no way that they have a defense where Jerome Baker is going to be occupying the same zone as Andrew Van Ginkel, and both guys are going to be standing within 2 yards of each other. There's no coverage. That doesn't exist, okay? That's not in any defensive playbook anywhere. And on that play, you could see Brian Flores was pretty hot on the sidelines because Mac Jones actually threw hot. If he drops into that zone, who knows? Maybe Mac Jones throws it right at him. And by the way, how many times are we going to get our hands on footballs at the line and not get it? Brandon Scarlett almost put an end to that game.
I thought he played well, actually, Scarlett. In the
he did.
Yeah, I thought he was active and he made plays. And
although he had the win,
solid player.
He had the win early in both hands. He just couldn't grab it. But if he does, that game ends.
Well, he does pick off the ball, which is, it's surprising only because you look at him, he's a very square, blocky player that doesn't move very well. You don't want him covering a lot of ground, but he's also really instinctive. So the ball finds him. But I think so Mac Jones early in the game, shaky against pressure. Under duress, and this, as Simon said, this was like Alabama. The first, you know, one of the first things he does is throw a backwards pass, and you know, 9 times out of 10, I think the defense scoops that up and runs it back for a touchdown. It just so happened this.
Except
this
we just stood there and stared at it.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, hey, that's nice. It just that's so happened this time. This time, an offensive player was able to jump on it and really minimize what could have been like a very, we're talking about rookie bloopers in their first game, John Beck type stuff. You know, that's so there's that. And then, you know, a couple of times he really panicked and threw a panicky ball, took a sack. I think that he was shaky that way, but then in the second half, it's those halftime adjustments or something. I don't know, because he was in a perfect rhythm and he could do no wrong, whether it was man or whether it was zone, whether it was a zero blitz, whether it was, you know, just every time he had the answer for where the ball was supposed to go. And he would get rid of it, you know, just before the pressure was getting in on him. Now, what I think that Miami was guilty of in the game is, you know, because they did blitz and they came up with lots of, you know, creative blitzes on review, but they weren't very tight with them. Like they didn't, you could see it's not mid-season form, you know, in terms of what they're doing pre-snap and how they're lining up and the disguise aspect of it all. And timing, which is so important, and the angles, which are very important. They weren't tight that way. And I think that cost them. And you saw, I mean, just all the way around, their chemistry with each other and their teamwork with that sort of thing was not tight. And that's why they're hitting him just after he throws it. And then there's at the beginning of the game, the big run, and maybe another one or two. They were loose on the run fits. I felt like that was just loose, like first game. It felt like to me, but in the second half, if there is a concern against the run, it's that when the Patriots are able to isolate Sam Agwavan as being in there at linebacker instead of Landon Roberts, then they were really able to get some things done on the ground, and he's not aggressive like Landon Roberts against the run. And I don't know. Yeah, it was. And I don't know if he like necessarily missed his gap or whatever, cause I'm not going to say that, but yeah, he's certainly not as aggressive as Landon Roberts. They did take advantage of it on some of those drives that we're talking about in the second half, where they're, you know, kind of dinking and dunking and driving down the field. The run game made a difference in the ability to dink and dunk and keep things manageable. And so that would be a concern. And there was also, you mentioned Jerome Baker and Andrew Van Ginkle having communication issues. Well, there was also a communication issue and a blatant one between Nick Needham and Sam Agwavan, that resulted in a big, you know, just before the last fumble,
there was a Needham really Coleman one
helped us seal the deal. There was a pass right up the middle, I think, to Jonnu Smith, and that was a really big issue with Nick Needham and Sam Agwavan pulling back into the exact same zone. Well, there's the Coleman toward the beginning of the game. Yeah, the Coleman. Yes, it was. It's the pick play, basically. Coleman got baited right into the trap and then got picked the hell off. You know, and it was bad. It was so bad that. You know, the guy almost walked in for a touchdown. So yeah, that's also communication, I think, as well. So that's a good point. But yeah, I think that all the way I come away from the game feeling on defense, like they really need to tighten some things up between communication and they're, you know, kind of getting midseason form with their blitzes and timing and chemistry with one another.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And stop playing so much zone. Although you had a great observation. Maybe it has to do with all those pick plays, and maybe that was the game plan. But even if you are going to play zone, you got to tighten that up too. And you got to do a better job of disguising it, because
they're good at it. They're good at the zone.
Because either Malcolm Perry gave up the entire playbook, the entire game plan, and everything he learned here, or Mac Jones and their offensive staff severely
out-coached
our defensive staff, because they seem to know when zone was coming.
I thought Jonnu Smith would have like 10 targets each.
And they had the right play calls.
So the Dolphins did a good job of shutting down the tight ends.
All right, on the way up.
But in a dink-and-dunk offense, or a more controlled offense, because you're protecting the quarterback, it's very difficult to cover all of those underneath. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Whether that's Bolden, whether that's Stevenson, whether that's Damian Harris, who looks really good, whether that's James White, obviously, that we know about, Smith, you know, Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry, Jacoby Myers runs underneath really well. It's, you know, it is difficult to cover all those players, but clearly we targeted Smith and Henry as guys that we wanted to shut down. I thought they did a really good job of doing that, actually. So certainly kudos on that part of the game plan.
All right, and on the way out here, very briefly, Brian Flores today said Austin Jackson is back at practice, and he's the left tackle. In my opinion, Liam Eikenberg gave up one pressure. Man, he has the job until they take it away. I train Austin Jackson at right tackle. What are you doing with the tackles, Simon? All right, Chris, what are you doing with the tackles, briefly?
Well, is the pressure you're talking about, is that the one where he got tripped by Solomon Kinley?
Yeah, well, that's what they credited. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, well, because that was clearly not his fault. I mean, he was pass protecting, and Solomon Kindley reached back his left foot and really just totally tripped him, and that's why he ended up being bowled over. So otherwise, you know, he had some moments where, you know, you need to find work a little bit better here, or don't hold, you know, the holding call. I thought it was a fair holding call. Some people didn't, you know, don't hold, find work a little bit better, but otherwise I thought he was really good. And I thought that he should be starting somewhere, whether it's right tackle or left tackle. He was a better left tackle. Yeah. I mean, you do have to account for the penalty, right? And mm-hmm. and I get that, which was a big deal. But he was a better left tackle, I felt, than Jesse Davis was a right tackle. And so between left tackle or right tackle, he's got to be somewhere. And I think they're kind of caught on, you know, we have investment in Austin Jackson. He's a first round pick and all that. That's why they're gonna stick with it. And they've also spent a bit of training camp and preseason trying to get this competition going between Liam Eichenberg and Jesse Davis at right tackle. So that's probably the stuck mindset right now. Mm. But I would look at Jackson or Davis and say, one of you step up and win it, because this other guy's better than one of you. Yeah.
All right, and we shall see. As Wednesday, we talk about a big game, 1 o'clock on Sunday here, on what should be a raucous Hard Rock Stadium.
Bring your caps.
Dolphins, Bills, kind of big. Dolphins win that game. They go up two games on the Buffalo Bills.
Mm-hmm.
Two games on the Buffalo cat. Bills.
Here's bring the cats.
Later.
All right, that's it. We will talk to you on Wednesday. Big game preview.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.